Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, and welcome to Films with Fred, a movie podcast. And I am your host, Fred Rojas. Now, some of you may know me because I do other podcasts. And what I will say about this podcast is the reason I decided to be just yet another movie podcast out in a sea of other podcasts is because I'm hoping to, as I tend to do when I make a podcast, offer something that has a slightly different perspective. And in this case, that perspective would be my own opinion. So this podcast is because I frequently watch movies and I don't really have an outlet to discuss it with people. My wife and I have great discussions, and I will get to my personal situation later for those that don't know me. And those are great, but sometimes I just want to get deeper or discuss my perspective or my opinions or various other things and just kind of identify and digest them. And finally, I think the biggest thing is I have an appreciation for just like a ton of movies. I'm not one of those people who thinks that every movie they see is great, but I am one of those people who has a deep appreciation for great movies that they see. And since I've recently been, you know, recataloging my collection, I'm an avid collector and owner of movies and digitizing them all as backup on a Plex server. And I frequently go to the movies. I go to the movies probably once a week. I will not specifically be doing that for this podcast. My habits in life should not change in any way, shape, or form. However, this podcast will yet again be an outlet for me to discuss it. So I think the easiest way to kick into a first episode, and I was going to do an episode zero where you kind of learn about me, and then I decided not to, and just jumping into episode one, and kind of here's why. I'm going to have different discussion points each week on different movies, and I don't know if I'm going to, for example, like see a movie at the theaters or talk about a movie that I read a book from or various other things. Like, I'm not going to set up automatic bits or sections of the show. Instead, I'm going to just have movies that I'm bringing to the table to discuss when the show starts up. That said, I will definitely be letting you know in advance with certain things, like I'm going to be doing it at the end of this show. I'm going to randomly pick a movie from my collection and going to watch it and discuss it next week. And that gives you listeners an opportunity to, one, watch it if you want to, and two, give your own opinions on it in the interactions up on the Spotify podcast polls. So definitely watch for those. But the basic format of this show is watch a movie, talk about it, you know, and there's going to be multiple movies in every show. And I'm right now aiming for 60 to 90 minutes. That's always a good rule of thumb. I think I tend to find myself closer to the 60 minute mark when I'm solo. I bet this episode is not going to be that long, but you know, that is kind of my focus. And when I'm going to talk about different movies, I will definitely show you in the show notes what those movies are so you can skip ahead and skip behind and various other things and bounce around. So with that in mind, since I've just got this nebulous concept of I'm going to talk about movies, I wanted to let you know kind of what you can expect from this podcast, especially from how to interact with the show and how the show is going to be formulated so that some of my biggest gripes about modern day podcasts can be overcome. So first and foremost, there are chapters. So if you're watching this in your podcast whatever you use, your podcast app or feed or whatever, you definitely want to check those out. Because if I'm going to talk about, so for example, this week, I'm going to talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Now, maybe you don't like Ghostbusters movies at all. Like, you know, I understand that in the cultural zeitgeist, you are going to be attacked and ridiculed for it. But that said, you know, there's no harm in not being interested in Ghostbusters. So if you're not interested in Frozen Empire and you want to just skip it completely or skip my discussion on it, well, then you can just pick the next time code and jump straight to that point. Another good thing is there's no Patreons, there's no Kickstarters, there's no ads, there's no ad reads, there's none of that stuff. And it does not have any form of funding right now. I'll probably get a tip jar going if people want to like buy me movies or help me out or something like that. But there's really no need to, and it's definitely not the reason for doing the podcast. This is not a business venture. This is a hobbyist venture. Next up, let's talk about spoilers, because spoilers is the big term, right, for the internet these days. And spoilers is an overused term, but loosely put, spoilers are when somebody tells you something about what happens in something, in this case, a movie, and you either weren't expecting it or didn't want to hear it. You didn't want to know that. So how do you discuss movies without discussing spoilers? Well, I have a pretty easy rule that I use with my friends when I'm discussing movies, and that is as follows. You can discuss any movie spoiler-free. I genuinely believe this. However, it can be very difficult to discuss the highs and lows of a movie without doing so. That said, lots of movies come out, and I think one of the biggest problems, especially like press people or hobbyists like myself get to, is I'm there to see the movie the opening night, and the podcast will come out within a few days. And so the movie's been out for what, 2-3 days? And it's very likely that most of the listeners have not gotten a chance to see the movie. So spoilers completely ruins that concept. So my rule is simply put, if a movie has been released at home, that is either via a streaming service, on a disc, available in a digital format, some way, shape, or form at home, and it is also no longer available in theaters, or it has done a run of more than 1 year. There are some ridiculous movies that return to theaters. There are some movies that ridiculously stay in theaters over a year. I don't think that's happened for a long time, but I've seen it. And I just wanted to like set those guidelines so we can set expectations so people aren't just trying to be like, oh, he talked about something and broke his own rules. No, it's real simple. Basically, the movie has a year to get out of theaters. And if it doesn't get out of theaters, or if it gets released and leaves theaters on home video, which will oftentimes be well within a year, it is open course for spoilers. Now, I will mention at the very top of discussing a movie if this is going to involve spoilers. But basically, you can assume that if I'm talking about a new movie, it'll be a spoiler-free discussion. And if I'm talking about a movie, say, from my collection, it will contain spoilers. Last but not least, I'm planning to talk about a movie for about 15 to 30 minutes. Again, this is about an appreciation for movies, not as much. It's definitely not like a review thing, although subjective opinions will obviously come out of it. And it's not about, you know, dwelling too much on, I would say, like the things that people, you know, I guess obsess over on the internet these days. And again, those are as follows: spoilers, sociopolitical issues, agendas, complaints, reviews, all that kind of stuff. I'm trying not to get bogged down in that stuff. Another thing I will mention is technical details. I am an extremely technical person when it comes to audiovisual equipment. There are different terms for it: video files, audio files, yada, yada, yada. I'm into technology as a whole, and I'm definitely into like video games and all that fun stuff. So yeah, you're dealing with a pretty technical person here. But A lot of people just want to watch a movie. And recently, Jeff Russo, somebody I listened to, Films at Home was his former YouTube thing. Now I think you can just look him up, Jeff Russo. It's J-E-F-F-R-U-S-S-O. Was discussing how everyone in like the 4K world has gotten too obsessed with stuff where like they go, oh, if you pause it at 31 minutes, 11 seconds, you will see blah, 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 blah. And he said, like, we're ruining the reason we go watch these movies. And I agree with him. So I figure it's best to let you know my setup right now. And then I will only mention the technical details if they become significant for whatever reason. And when I say technical details, it won't be stuff like, here's a lot of stuff that I see on the internet where people are like, oh, is it in Dolby Vision, Dolby Atmos? Well, you can look that stuff up. You know, here's another, in my opinion, slightly foolish question. Oh, would you get something on DVD, on Blu-ray, or on 4K? Well, I think that's really a question of how high quality do I want the movie to be, because they are all often mastered, unless they're newer releases, which will happen. Movies get re-released all the time. But oftentimes, the most recent master will be the quality bar. So if it's just recent, if let's say Ghostbusters Afterlife, let's talk about that 2021 film. Ghostbusters Afterlife was released on 4K. Well, that was the recent release, so it was mastered in 4K. So if you love Ghostbusters Afterlife, it stands to reason you will probably buy it in 4K. If you like Ghostbusters Afterlife and want it in your collection, you'll probably buy it on Blu-ray. Maybe you just have a DVD player, so you'll buy it on DVD. These are not things for me to decide, nor for us to discuss, so I'm not going to. Now, I will mention little things, though, since I'm technical, like, oh, I found the 4K to be much more significant and sharper, or I really didn't notice much of a difference, so use that in your thought process as to whether or not to pick it up. It'll be like a passing statement at the very end. That's also where I'll make comparisons to things like, I'm going to try to tell you like, well, I watched it in streaming and I watched it in disc, and in perfect scenarios, you can expect, you know, them to look relatively similar when in motion for the average movie watcher. Your family's not going to notice. If you want to obsess over it, maybe you'll notice. Things like that. So I'll mention those technical details, but I'm not going to get bogged down in them. They'll kind of be like a closing point as to, oh, so now you want to get this movie, you know, for the released movies. Here's what you can do. Next, what is my setup? What do I watch movies on? Well, by and large, I'm watching movies on an LG OLED C1. So it's one of the more preferred OLED models, I guess I would say. And I can watch them on all different kinds of media. I have a Plex server where I can stream the movies directly if I rip them off of a disc. I have streaming services, and I mean more specifically digital purchase things. So think of like Vudu. It's now Fandango at Home, where you actually buy a movie at full price. You don't have like a Netflix subscription, and you watch it. But there are lots of things that are only available on those streaming services like Netflix, Hulu, Paramount, etc. I will be watching those there as well if I need to. And then I also have a myriad of disc players. So, but by and large, I will be watching on the LG in the most native high quality version I can usually find for movies I love. And I do have a surround sound setup. So I have a Dolby Atmos. We call it not a Dolby Atmos, but I am compatible with Dolby Atmos, but I have a speaker setup called a 5.1.4. What that means is it's five speakers for surround sound. So a center channel, two front left and right, and a rear left and right. Sorry, not two. Two front speakers left and right, and two rear speakers left and right. And then my front and back speakers all have a upward facing Dolby Atmos speaker. In my house, I determined after trying some ceiling speakers that the ones that bounce up to the air were better than the ones embedded in the ceiling. That's just a personal preference of mine. So that's how I'll be playing it. And then I have one subwoofer. So that's the setup. I will oftentimes be playing it with the highest quality surround sound I can do. And I am compatible with Dolby Atmos and DTS:X as well. Those are the two different height versions of speakers. But I do what is called reference or native quality, in that I won't take like a stereo movie. If a movie only is available in stereo, like my Blu-ray of Another Stakeout, it's only available in stereo. I will not do like the remixer in the amplifier to make it you know, DTSX or Dolby Atmos, like, you know, remixing it. I'm just going to play it as the movie masters it. Just, it's called Direct. Pure Direct, I believe, is what my Pioneer receiver refers to it as. My Pioneer is my receiver, and I use Pioneer for my height and my front and rear speakers. My center channel is a custom Polk Audio, not a custom, but a specific Polk Audio speaker. Again, those details are probably not that important for people, but, and they are bookshelf speakers for my front and rears. They are all the same speaker with the Dolby Atmos built in, but I do have to wire the top speakers and the bottom speakers with their own separate speaker wire. So that's how I do it. And then I have a Sony subwoofer. So it's a powered subwoofer, by the way. That's just some little details for me. If I've already started to bore you on that stuff, rest assured you won't hear a whole lot about it, but I'm getting it out of the way. So next up, let's talk about me for a minute. So if you do not know who I am, and that's ideal because I'm trying to get new listeners here, but for those of you who do know me, maybe you'll learn some new things. I am 42 years old. I live in Kansas City, in a suburb of Kansas City, and I have a wife, two dogs, both corgis, and a 12-year-old daughter. And I grew up watching and loving movies. I even went to film school. I went to Columbia. Well, first of all, I went to DePaul University in downtown Chicago because I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago in a town called Mundelein, Illinois, which is squeezed in between three popular suburbs in northern Lake County, of Vernon Hills, Mundelein, and Libertyville. And I went to Libertyville High School. I remember being obsessed with movies ever since I was a kid, watching movies with my dad and everything. One of probably the biggest reasons was because my mom and I don't have similar opinions on the world, and my dad and I really can't connect on anything because his favorite hobbies are not hanging out with children. So the movies was where we could all find a level playing ground, and that's probably why I love them so much. It was where my mom and I could watch something that we don't see eye to eye on, and where my dad and I could sit down and do something together. I do have two sisters, and one is 4 years my junior and one is 10 years my junior. I didn't really grow up watching a lot of movies with them as the only child for the first 4 years of my life, and definitely the eldest child. I found myself going to movies more and watching movies more with my parents, without my sisters, but my parents divorced when I was 14. We did do some family movie nights and stuff like that, but it was always, you know, like crowd stuff. It was never the movies I wanted to watch. I do remember that growing up, my friends were really into, I've got one friend, Chris, who was really into horror movies. He got me into horror movies and started watching those at a young age. But that clashed a little bit with the fact that my mother and father had completely different opinions as to rated R movies. My dad thought they were all fine, which is why at 8 years old, I saw RoboCop. And those of you who are getting all judgy, come on. I was born in 82. In 1988, I would have seen it in 1990. I was 8 years old. I remember that. Lots of kids were being shown RoboCop. It doesn't make it okay, but it's what we did. Whereas my mother, who is very against sex on film, she doesn't feel comfortable around nudity, and that's fine. I don't feel comfortable around watching sex on film with my mom. But she's also very against swearing. She was born Catholic, as was my dad. Like most Catholics, she's perfectly fine with violence, never really had an issue with it, although she found RoboCop to be obscenely violent and therefore was against it. But basically growing up, I was not allowed to see R-rated movies. And then she had some weird rules, right? Like she didn't really care that, you know, about the heart ripping scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, because I cited to her it was rated PG. And yes, you can go back and look. Was Temple of Doom one of those PG-13s? I'll have to go back and check. Anyway, but then she wouldn't let me see Pretty Woman just because it was about a prostitute. So there's that. Then I remember getting into indie films. I remember my buddy Ray is probably the biggest one to introduce me to those types of films. But Chris was also involved. And it started with movies like Clerks, you know, like Kevin Smith's Clerks. In I think we saw it in 94 when it came out, maybe in 95. But from there, it progressed to stuff like The Blair Witch Project. And again, these are kind of laughable to the modern day equivalent of the indie scene. But they were what we had when you were a teenager growing up in the suburbs of Chicago, and you didn't know too much, and movie stores were still a thing. I think distribution and availability was our biggest setback, right? You had to go somewhere where you could find these things, where you had to buy them super expensive at Suncoast Video. And, you know, as much as I loved anime, as much as anyone else out there, $70 is a lot to pay for a one-hour VHS or DVD. So when I knew I was really getting into films was Libertyville High School had a movie called Newport South, which I do have in my collection, that filmed at our school. I did not get picked to be an extra, but lots of my friends did. And I found that fascinating. And then I got my own DVD player when I was like 16 years old and got a job and started watching movies incessantly. So then I got into theater. And in my senior year, I got to play as Mercutio in Romeo and Juliet and as Mr. I forget who it is, but You Can't Take It With You, that classic play from the, I believe, the 20s. I played the straight-laced dad amongst a bunch of comedians. Or the straight-laced boss, sorry. Mr. Kirby, I think it was. But anyway, I was the straight-laced boss, so like I was the butt of all the jokes for that comedy play. And it was a kind of good switch because in Romeo and Juliet, everyone's really dramatic and depressed, other than me, who's the jokester, right? That got me into acting, interested in acting, and I ended up going to DePaul University for acting. And I don't think I even made it a semester before I got cut from the program. And so then I stayed at DePaul for a little while, but I realized I didn't want to stay there because I still wanted to pursue the arts. And so I ended up getting a scholarship through my dad's company, an art scholarship, to go to Columbia College Chicago. They helped me fund that. And I went there. You kind of learn everything evergreen, but I was most interested in editing and production. I like to plan everything and edit it. I know everybody wants to either act in a film or be a producer or a director of photography or stuff like that. I was more interested in the other things. Side note, I was definitely interested in special effects, but I had no artistic talent. I can't even draw stick figures well, let alone sculpt things. Therefore, your ability to do something like, say, Tom Savini or Greg Nicotero does, probably off the table. I was told very early on, don't even try to pursue special effects. Went to Columbia College for 2 years, did not graduate, and then left it, and then pursued a career in journalism, which ended up not working out either. And my career is now, it was in IT, and now I'm in corporate compliance for a corporate and government charge audit compliance for a health system. So there's a fun, boring little thing for you. But I never lost track of my love for film and watched them ever since. So because of that, I watch movies constantly and, of course, married a girl who really, my wife Julie, who really adores films, grew up watching movies with her dad and everything like that. And then I now have a daughter who is a little less into movies than I would like her to be, but she definitely does the family things. We watch movies as a family. She definitely gets interested in certain movies and things like that. So you'll hear about her as well. But her name is Autumn and she's 12, but she's much more into gaming and social stuff, like hanging with her friends, either in person or online. And let's face it, who wasn't that way when they were 12? So that's kind of my background. And last but not least, I did want to mention, because I've kind of talked about it a little bit here, this show will probably be explicit. And the reason being is I'm going to discuss movies of all ratings. That includes the NC-17 rating, because yes, I do own movies like The Dreamers and Showgirls, and do unironically like those movies. And so we're going to have to talk about some things. We're going to have to talk about graphic violence when I talk about my love of horror movies. We're going to have to talk about swearing. I'm going to have to probably swear myself. We're definitely going to be talking about sex, drugs, and all kinds of fun stuff. So there you go. Second of all, I'm kind of a very open-minded person. I would say I'm independent with politics, which just makes everyone roll their eyes and says, okay, whatever, centrist. And I am open about various things like my private life and sexuality and things like that. I am straight, cishet, all that fun stuff, but meaning I'll talk about sex stuff. So a good example of this, and I'm not going to get too deep into it because I don't want to get bogged down in minutia of like what I could talk about, you know. I want to get specific when we talk about movies. So with that in mind, the A good example of this is I recently watched Saltburn, which I think lots of other people did. And I do want to cover it in a future episode, so I'm not going to talk about my thoughts on that right now. But Saltburn has a lot of kink stuff in it. And that is, people are like, oh my God, can you believe? Okay, so let's just address it. There is going to be some spoilers here. So if you don't want to hear those spoilers, you can fast forward about 2 minutes, or actually you can fast forward to when I start talking about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. But in Saltburn, there is a scene where the lead character licks a drain that he had seen a person he's living with, somebody he's kind of idolizing, a male, masturbated in the tub. And then the bath water drained out. So it would be, you know, it would contain both semen and water. And he went in and sucked out the bath water from the drain. I don't find that hot. It's not something I would do. I don't find that sexy. And I'm not gay. So I obviously wouldn't do that if I saw one of my friends masturbating in a tub. First of all, I wouldn't watch. And second of all, I wouldn't follow up with that behavior. All of that said, I ain't gonna judge, like, you do you. And I'm willing to discuss, you know, my thoughts on why people are freaking out about this stuff. But again, I don't want to get bogged down in too much of, like, you know, my wife's favorite phrase is, you do you. If you want to freak out about some dude sucking bathwater out of, used bathwater out of a drain, go right ahead. There's Reddit and a whole world for you to discuss it. For here, it's just more of like, let's talk about, you know, being like, okay, well, he's definitely into him. And what does that say about this movie? And why, if I love this movie, and Saltburn I like, I wouldn't say I love, but why, you know, what draws that to me? And again, that this kind of wraps up with my personal parallels. So this is all about me. This is what I like about movies and what draws it to me. So, and my goal here is that if you like what I'm talking about and you haven't seen it or haven't thought about seeing it, maybe you'll watch it. Or more likely, if you have seen it and you hear my perspective, maybe it'll encourage you to take this different perspective, if it is different for you, and reanalyze it and look into it. But with all that said, I think it best to wrap up this episode with a demonstration of exactly what I'm trying to convey here about this podcast. I'm probably not doing the best job because I'm just kind of riffing. This is not a scripted podcast. But I figured I would wrap up with a couple of movies I've seen at the theaters, and then we will pick a movie from my collection, and it'll kind of give us a book club and something to get back to when we discuss you know, the podcast next week. And with that in mind, I also wanted to point out this is a weekly podcast, and it will come out on Mondays. I think I'm going to do one of those things where I like wrap it up on a Sunday night and post it so that it goes live Monday morning, probably at like 8 a.m. or something. But who knows? But this podcast will come out on Mondays. So that kind of gives you all that fun stuff. So without further ado, let's talk about the two. I'm going to talk about two movies here that I saw this week. The big blockbuster movie I saw, which is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And then I'll also be talking about, I saw another movie at the theaters, which is part of AMC's like Scream Unseen, where they tell you just what the genre of the movie is and what the rating is. And you go see a movie, you don't know what it's going to be. And it's a movie that, as far as I can tell, hasn't come out yet. So I saw a horror movie, rated R, that was called Sting. And yeah, I'll be talking about that as well, which I'm sure AMC is very happy for. But I want to point out, this is not a promotional thing by any stretch of the imagination. It's just a movie to talk about. But before we get started with that, let's circle back and dig into Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is rated PG-13 and just came out this week. And basically, it is a follow-up to Ghostbusters Afterlife from 2021, which was this attempt to kind of revitalize the Ghostbusters franchise. So if you'll permit me to take a little trek down memory lane, in 1984, Ghostbusters came out, and I've heard it referred to in many different contexts, but my favorite one is that it was a cocaine movie. It was this idea, and I have no idea if it's true, that Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis, who played Ray and Egon, respectively, two of the Ghostbusters, they made a movie about these paranormal investigators who decided to leave academia. In fact, they were pushed out of academia and go out on their own to capture ghosts. And it's a comedy, by and large, and it really came out and hit America by storm. Well, it hit the world by storm. And Ghostbusters was really popular. It was goofy. But despite that fact, I mean, the studio put everything behind it. So Ivan Reitman directs it. You got a lot of big names in there, including like Sigourney Weaver and Bill Murray, which I haven't mentioned yet. And you've got a lot of special effects in there. Like, there was some very notable special effects through and through. And it's really what drew me to liking this movie when I was a kid. It's also got some really raunchy humor. You know, everyone always talks about the scene where Ray is having a dream with a ghost above him, shall we say? But anyway, it all came together very well. And it really touched a lot of kids, I think, growing up in the 80s, myself included. I loved this movie to death. We had the VHS with the classic Ghostbusters logo. I think that logo is very marketable as well. And I even like the soundtrack. I always forget the name of that song. I think I might throw it in the closing credits here. But it's that song that plays. It's so 80s. And it plays when Sigourney Weaver, as the gatekeeper, blows out her apartment. And all the ghosts, it's when the containment unit gets shut down and all the ghosts spread into the world. And sorry for anybody out there who hasn't seen Ghostbusters. I promise I'll get to to Frozen Kingdom. But yeah, so that movie just had it all. And I remember playing that tape till it basically broke. And what I find so significant is my daughter did too. She didn't play the tape till it broke. She watched it on Blu-ray. And then I put it on our Plex server so she could watch it over and over again in a digital form on various TVs in our house. But she loves watching Ghostbusters, the original. And she loved all different kinds of stuff. Everything from, I remember the dog creatures like scared her and she loved it. I remember we've got old videos of her doing the Gozer routine where she's like, "Are you a god? Then die." And she used to love stuff like that. So it was really great to see that generational leap. And I think it speaks to the timelessness of Ghostbusters 1. Suffice to say, without getting too much into it, because I do want to circle back to the movie at hand here, the other movies did not have that kind of charisma. It just seriously did not. I think I just said Frozen Kingdom. It's actually Frozen Empire, sorry. But like, the sequel was too goofy. And there had been a cartoon show, The Real Ghostbusters. I absolutely loved that show. I didn't love it so much when it became Slimer in The Real Ghostbusters. But, you know, as recently as, I want to say that show started in 86 or something. But, like, when I was a kid, like, growing up, I probably saw Ghostbusters for the first time when I was, like, 4 years old. Like, in 86. And then the cartoon started on Saturday mornings, and I was watching that incessantly. And then the movie comes out, the sequel, and it was too kiddie. Like, even for me at like 8, 9 years old, I was like, this is too kiddie. They're using an NES Advantage, which is a joystick controller for the Nintendo Entertainment System, to like use the Statue of Liberty, and there's pink slime everywhere, and it was just too goofy, and Lewis has become a Ghostbuster, and what did they do with Janine's hair? And it was just very different, and I didn't love it. I did think Viggo the Carpathian was a cool, villain. And I do think ultimately there were some good items in there, but it was a lackluster sequel. And then it goes into hiatus, right, for a long time, and they didn't know what to do. And then you get basically Ghostbusters the video game is the next time that comes out. That came out in the late 2000s. And it was this idea of like, you know, they brought back all the Ghostbusters, and it was this idea of what should have been the third script, right? Of like, you know, a franchise version of the Ghostbusters. And then they made the Girl Ghostbusters movie, the infamous 2016 Girl Ghostbusters movie. And I really liked that movie. My daughter really liked that movie. And that's probably the biggest thing. She was 5 years old. I think we showed it to her when she was six. She adored that movie. She loved watching it. She found it really funny. But like, I particularly love Kate McKinnon, who is kind of like the, you know, Egon adjacent. But I love all those characters. And I just, I did like that movie, but I get where people's criticisms are like, it wasn't my Ghostbusters, you know? And to put aside all the noise, shall we say, of the bad ways the internet talks about that movie, I get why people didn't inherently like it. But I, for one, am a fan. Then we get Ghostbusters Afterlife. And again, it's another attempt to bring it all back, but it falls flat. And it falls flat for various reasons that if Ghostbusters, let me get this right this time, Frozen Empire ends up doing better than Afterlife, which I believe it will, and gets praised more than Afterlife, which I believe it will, it kind of proves my point where we get bogged down. I mean the cultural zeitgeist and get bogged down in the minutiae of too many details. It's too detail-oriented. We worry too much about the little nitpicky things that we don't appreciate the grand scheme. So what Ghostbusters Afterlife tries to fix is, first of all, it's like, let's bring back the original characters. Second of all, let's make sure to give callbacks and love, right? So we got that in the quote-unquote Girl Ghostbusters, the 2016 Ghostbusters movie, but it felt like they paid people to be there. Bill Murray's cameos and things like that, and various others. They didn't feel like this was a collaboration, shall we say, right? Other than potentially Dan Aykroyd, who is absolutely in love with the supernatural and things like that, but I don't think he wrote it. I'm actually 99% certain he didn't write it, and so it's not from his heart, you know, and the original movie was, and he's just a weird guy who's always into ghosts, and so, but Afterlife's faults were, they brought back the original characters, but they put it out in Oklahoma, right, because it's in the old Spangler, you know, family house that Egon, you know, ran away to. Egon had a very sad upbringing. It has the next generation, like his daughter had two kids. And I have to give big credit here. Like I absolutely, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I absolutely loved McKenna Grace as Phoebe. You know, she is like this female version of Egon, and she pulls it off so well. And, you know, I'm well aware that like there's Finn Wolfhard, best known from Stranger Things. He plays Mike. And, you know, he does a pretty good job of being like Phoebe's, you know, brother and being an Egon. But Phoebe's really what your eyes are drawn to on the screen. Right. And Finn just doesn't hold up, but he was some star power and he does a good job in that movie. And he does bring his own side of this. And the reason why is Carrie Coon, who I didn't know her very well. She's been in some stuff, but she plays Callie Spangler, the Egon's daughter. And she doesn't know him at all. She doesn't like him, clearly. Kind of spoiler alert, he's dead in this movie. So there's that. But Finn kind of gives this... Finn, the actor who plays Trevor Spangler, gives this other perspective where Phoebe Spangler, you know, Grace McKenna's character, she is absolutely Egon. Like she is like a juxtaposition of the original character from the original movie. Whereas Trevor is... He offers another perspective. He's part that, but he's also part charismatic and he's easygoing and he's very different from Egon. And so I liked that duality you get with these siblings. And then Paul Rudd, just, I love Paul Rudd. I think he's extremely charming. So fuck it. Let's put Ant-Man in there and let's just add him to the group, and he's fun. I liked what they did with Afterlife. There's some great callbacks and things like that, but it's still this idea that you're putting a movie that was supposed to be like goofy from the 80s up on a pedestal and treating its lore, dare I say, too seriously. And that's especially true with the weight put on the Spangler estate. And then especially with like the return. So mild spoilers for Afterlife, but there is some hints at Gozer, the Gozerian. We get some returns of stuff like that. And just a lot of callbacks to more minute details of that original movie that I don't think people remember. Enter the make good, which is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And I have to say, I saw this with my brother-in-law, who's a big Ghostbusters fan. He didn't love it. And then I saw this with my daughter, who didn't love Afterlife, to the point that she didn't remember much of it when she saw the trailer for Frozen Empire. And she sees trailers a lot because we drag her to the movies a lot. She didn't remember Afterlife and didn't want to remember Afterlife. She didn't really want to see it. And she didn't want to see it again. She didn't want to rewatch it before this movie. And she wasn't too keen on this movie either. She goes, I'm worried it's going to be boring. And I love that my daughter can be that raw with me and just tell me. My wife was super psyched to see it, but she had to work all weekend. And it's going to leave the theaters, especially the Dolby Cinema. We saw this in the Dolby Cinema. And so it was an opportunity to see it in an ideal theater sense. And so she let me bring my daughter to it. Fast forward to the end of the movie. My daughter loved this movie. My daughter adored this movie. And was like, it's crazy how short it was. And I was like, it was like 2 hours. And she goes, really? I can't believe that. Like, I thought this movie was really good. So she really dug it and wants to see it again. So what is it? It is, they take the nuclear family kind of Paul Rudd and, sorry, which is Mr. Gooberson, and Callie Spangler and her two kids. And they, what is it? Winston, the black Ghostbuster, who I feel bad, like everybody else, I didn't mention him until now, but he became a philanthropist, as we learn in Afterlife, and he's super rich. And he has decided to purchase the Ghostbusters firehouse, and his company is going to preserve it and allow the Ghostbusters to be almost like a public service, but I get the feeling they still charge. And so now, you know, the different, you know, this kind of family created from the previous, you know, movie are the Ghostbusters. But we're in downtown New York. We've even got Peck coming back, who he was the prick guy from the EPA who shut down the containment unit in the first movie. He's now mayor and he hates them. And they've got all these fun new devices, right? Like right in the beginning, we get to see Phoebe out there using the sidecar Ghostbusters ghost catcher, which I believe was something from the real Ghostbusters cartoon that then got put into Afterlife. But they were out in cornfields and stuff, so it didn't really matter. Now you put them in New York traffic and it's a whole different world. And then they gave an opportunity for everyone to kind of come back, right? So Harold Ramis is unfortunately dead. That's why they had him dead in Afterlife. So Egon's dead, but we still get, you know, Ernie Hudson as Winston. We still get Dan Aykroyd as Ray, and we still get Bill Murray as Peter. You know, they all come back and make their showings. We even get, Annie Potts comes back as Janine. So that was a lot of fun. And we get this new story of, which is interesting, of like an ice age, right? Like this ghost that's like a before pre-Sumerian demon that was seen as like a god. And it, so we've kind of got this return to the Gozer concept, but like it's its own version of it. And it creates like, it can create ice. And it's screwing with the containment unit. The ghosts can get out. That's always a great threat. That was definitely the big threat in the original movie. You know, again, it calls back in all the right ways. So it brings back the firehouse. It brings back New York. Yes, we've got new Ghostbusters, but we bring back the old ones to kind of cushion that blow. And I'm going to be frank with you. I think this idea that we need the old guys, while it's lovable, as long as they were involved in the writing, like Dan Aykroyd was involved in the writing, that's all I really care about. And if he wants to write himself into the movie, that's great. But the bringing back of Bill Murray, who I bet didn't want to come back, kind of, meh. Hopefully Annie Potts wanted to come back. She hasn't done too much. And I feel like Ernie Hudson wanted to come back, but I know Bill Murray was a big sticking point. Like, don't bring these people back if you don't have to. And I do think that the star power we get with these new four Ghostbusters is enough to carry that film. And there's a lot of family stuff and camaraderie and love and this and that. So I think this movie held its own, but they definitely knew what to do. Where, again, new mayor, bring back the original Ghostbusters. We've got this Gozer adjacent. The threat's still the same, where they're going to get out of the containment unit. It all comes together to largely just be the safe retelling of the Ghostbusters for a new generation. And I think that's my biggest dig against it, even though I thoroughly enjoyed it. We've even got Slimer in the attic, and that's in the trailers, so it's not a spoiler. One big thing I do want to point out is we've got this new character, Lynd. I won't really talk too much about her. She's played by Emily. I think it's Alyn, A-L-Y-N. And she is like this friend character to Phoebe. And it's because Phoebe does not get along with humans very well. She has a personal connection to Gruberson, you know, Paul Rudd's character, for reasons that are explained in Afterlife, and it kind of enhances itself in this one. But by and large, we deal with the one subplot that we deal with in this movie, and this won't be spoilers, so don't worry. I know you're ready to click the button, but there's a subplot in this movie about the loneliness of Phoebe. And the fact that she can't connect with other human beings. She's now in downtown New York. She's 15, but her brother's 18. And that becomes a point where Trevor's 18, so he's allowed to be a Ghostbuster, as is obviously her mom and her pseudo-dad, Gruberson. Whereas she's 15, she's a minor, so she, early into the movie, is not allowed to practice as a Ghostbuster. So now the one group she had, her family, which had the thing she loved, which is her work, is gone. And so if you don't have humans and things like that, you know, you feel very isolated and lonely. And I think that's a very common trend to a lot of kids nowadays. And I don't have a whole lot to base that off of, but I have more to base off of it than most of the people I hear talking about this on online, not the pundits. I'm talking to my daughter and her friends, and they said that they can understand and connect with that plot. So enter Lynd, this character who is unique, and I won't explain why, that Phoebe kind of attaches to, and it becomes dangerous, and it becomes problematic for the plot. Not in the context of the plot, not for the movie. It works, is what I'm trying to say. But I do think that's where we're going to lose some of your Ghostbusters fans. Because they're like, man, I don't want to hear about the melodrama of a teenage girl. But you know what? I'm like, fuck you, dude. Like, this is what's going on in the real world today. And so if you want to sterilize your movies to the point that they don't acknowledge the outside world today, and I'm sorry, even if you didn't have kids, the world did have kids. Like, let's talk about it. And people like my daughter need people they can relate to. And Phoebe is one of them, even if she's nothing like Phoebe. And so I think it worked. And I think it was really good. And I think it's a friendship with Phoebe and Lynd. I think people are going to go off the deep end and say it's like a potentially lesbianic relationship. I don't think that's true. I don't think that is conveyed. I think if you want to read into it that way and that is what makes you feel comfortable, you know, you do you, but it's just a friendship. Or at least that's what it's supposed to be at face value. And so I guess I would say back to the age-old adage, don't read too much into it. Or if you want to, just to make yourself feel comfortable, that's fine. But don't make a mountain out of a molehill. But ultimately, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire becomes a worthy return to form where I could definitely see some people, some buttholes out there, being like, that and this, you know, the original and this, that's all I need. Okay. Sure. We are now in the fifth movie in the franchise, though, so it's becoming a thing, and they're definitely set up for more. But I do think this is going to be the most evergreen, likable one, even though it's light on the risks, which is the one criticism I level against it. I liked it. So if you're contemplating seeing it, I highly recommend going and checking out Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. If you know you hate Ghostbusters, you've probably clicked ahead. So for those of the rest of you who aren't sure how you feel, thank you for sticking with me. And next up, we'll wrap with something a little more lighthearted. Let's wrap up with Sting. Okay, so how to talk about this? This is arachnophobia for the modern generation, but it's weaved in with a little bit of don't let let the right one in, or let me in was the American version of it. And what I mean by that is the plot is it's a spider movie. It's a horror movie. It's a spider movie. You're in New York and it's modern day. They do have cell phones, right? I'll talk about this in future episodes, and feel free to chime in on what you think. But my wife always loves to see movies that place themselves back in the past, in the 80s or the 90s, to get away from cell phones so that they can write their plot without cell phones, because cell phones ruin every plot. But anyway, this is hard R. So it's going to have a lot of violence in it, although it's not, it's pretty light from a horror movie perspective. But the idea is, it is modern day New York. There's a blizzard going on. People are basically stuck in their houses. You get the feeling people can't move around too much, although there's no one stopping these people from dialing 911 other than the spider itself. An alien life form falls from the heavens. You see that in the beginning. You're not explained anything about it. And it lands in a dollhouse in this apartment building and gives birth to a baby spider. And there's this girl, Charlotte, who lives in this building. She's, I think, 12, maybe 14. She's very punk rock. She's a girl that she's designed so that both 12-year-olds and adults can relate to her. And she breaks into... She uses the vents to break into it. You find out it's her grandma's sister's apartment. So what is that? Like your great aunt? I don't know. But she breaks into her apartment, a dollhouse room specifically, to poke around. And she finds this spider and brings it in as a pet. And as you can probably imagine, it grows incredibly fast, and then eventually it starts using the vents itself to start killing people in the apartment building. It's a fun little creepy crawly movie where you fear, it looks like a Black Widow, you fear this creepy alien creature. It's killing people. There's some great special effects in it. There's some pretty gory stuff that happens from time to time. And you're always wondering what will get eaten next, because you know humans are on the table, but they definitely throw in stuff like parrots, chihuahuas, let's see, babies. There's a newborn baby. Charlotte is Charlotte's mom had her with a different dad. And then that guy has taken off. She's now got a new boyfriend, but, or maybe they're married. I can't remember. But, and Charlotte and him connect. He's a comic book artist, or an aspiring comic book artist, and she's a good drawer. So he's kind of opened up that artistic sense about her. But he's a maintenance man for the building, and he works under the great aunt, the grand that Charlotte's stealing from her room for various reasons, or breaking into her room for various reasons. And he's the maintenance man, but again, he's an aspiring comic book artist. And then the mom has a stay-at-home job, and then her and him, the mom and this guy, have a kid together that's 6 months old. So you're always waiting for the spider to go after that kid. And whether or not it does, I'll leave to your imagination. But so, you know, and it's lighthearted. It's a fun little horror piece. And again, like I said, it's Let Me In meets arachnophobia for the modern day. You know, it was $5 if you paid for it. I'm part of the AMC A-list, so I saw it for free. It was fun with that regard. I do not think they're going to release this to a massive theatrical thing, but I could see it becoming part of the artisan thing. It was this screen unseen that I originally saw American Fiction, which I hope to talk about on a future episode as well. And that won an Academy Award, right? So there you go. But it was never meant to be on the big screen. It's not going to fight for the Dolby Cinema or anything, but it was fun on a Monday night for 90 minutes. So with that in mind, you know, that's Sting. I don't know when it'll come out. I'm sure it'll come out soon, but who knows exactly when. With American Fiction, I think it was like a 2 or 3 week lead time. And the idea is that I'll get the buzz out there along with other people talking about it on social media and people will go to watch it. But, and fun fact for your nerd culture out there, they make it very clear that the reason it's called Sting is because the girl early into the movie names it Sting. And it's named after Bilbo's sword in The Hobbit, his glowy sword. And yes, I'm aware that Frodo later gets Sting and uses it in The Lord of the Rings. But you know what? The Hobbit's a good book, damn it. And I like The Hobbit and read The Hobbit before The Lord of the Rings. So Sting is still Bilbo's sword to me. But with that, I think we should wrap up. Okay, so let's do the usual podcast stuff. I will get you a URL soon. You're most likely listening to this on my other podcast, Video Game Purists, where I've used this as a bonus episode, or seeing the thing on social media, so you already know the URL. But I haven't established it when I recorded this, and according to Spotify, I need to formally Anchor, which is why I use it, because it's a free podcasting service. You have to upload your first episode before they let you do your URL. But if things go my way, it will ideally be, let's see here, let's see what they're going to call it. Let me see the whole string. It's going to be, come on, where is it? Hold on. This is good radio, right? It's going to be podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/films-with-Fred. And I'll get you a lighter URL as soon as I can. But yes, last but not least, how do you interact with this podcast? Well, the easiest way you interact with this podcast is there's going to be a Q&A and a poll. Answer to those. I'm not going to set up a new email address because there's no need to, and it's kind of a pain in the ass. So we'll see how much people want to. Another thing I've learned about podcasts in the modern day is less people want to write into them. I've had like almost no responses with my over 600 strong audience with me and Trees on Video Game Purists, which is a fun fact. It's a video game podcast, but it is more about being older men and having families than it is, and being gamers rather than it is about being a hardcore gaming podcast. But hopefully this gave you a feel for what you can expect from this show. And last but not least, let's dig into Fred's stash and see what the movie's going to be. So I have most of my movies on my Plex server. So I'm going to hit shuffle here and let's see what it picked. Hesher. Okay. So I don't know if you all are familiar with this movie, but this is your homework if you want to. But I'm going to be watching and talking about the 2011 film Hesher, which stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Natalie Portman and various other people. And we will be talking about that. So it's spelled H-E-S-H-E-R. I know for a fact you can find this on streaming services as well as on DVD and Blu-ray. So I will be watching that. The movie is rated R and it is a drama mostly, but it has some comedic moments. So it considers itself a drama comedy. And it's directed by Spencer Susser and it's roughly an hour and 45 minutes long. So anyway, feel free to go check it out. We will be talking about it and feel free to talk about it in the polls and Q&A sessions that will be on this very show. So all you got to do is go check out the Spotify feed on the URL and you can answer to this. So without further ado, this is Fred saying enjoy your movies and try to be good to each other. Peace out, homies.